in the morning. It's now the afternoon. You're the final case for the day, but I do want to say one thing before you begin, which is, if you would, when you state your name and the party that you represent, would you also help us so we know how to pronounce those things correctly, and if there's any other information regarding how you'd like us to refer to you, feel free at that point to make that known to us as well. Mr. Gellinger, go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon. My name is Richard Gellinger. I'm representing myself. I'm representing my wife. Let me tell you a tale. Tale of offense, tale of two litigations, tale of two appeals, a tale of two amendments to municipal ordinances, tale of two lies. My wife and I live in Anoka, a beautiful town. We're in the middle lot of a stack of lots, three lots. The Mississippi River runs from west to east, and Rice Street runs east and west, and we're between those two. My neighbor to the south is Councilmember Weaver and his wife Robin. They abut the river to the south and us to the north. There's a third lot, our neighbor to the north, that is on Rice Street. We, the Weavers and the Gellingers, get to Rice Street via a easement driveway, private drive. With a dispute, and the one fence, was erected by Councilmember Weaver. It was 6 feet high in front of his house, 56 feet long, on his property, but along the property line between the two lots. We saw it as blocking view and light. We saw it as too high and in clear violation of the existing city ordinance. The existing city ordinance, 2018, provided that there were three listed areas of restriction where a fence could be no higher than 4 feet. First one was in front of the front line of a residential structure, in front of the house. Next one, along a public street or right-of-way. Next one, in a front yard as defined by the chapter of the ordinance. We went to the city and we said, we have a protection here. We're protected against a 6-foot fence in the front of his house. And they said, no. That's his backyard, he can do what he wants. We sued, litigation number one. It went to district court and it came to this court on appeal. This court determined and looked at the ordinance and said, you've got three separate restrictions here. And even though the front line of the residential structure is not defined in the ordinance, it's plain and clear in its language. The Weaver fence is illegal. This court's order was issued in December, but it takes time to get things done. The judgment wasn't docketed for months. We didn't get a remanded order out of the district court granting us summary judgment until August. But shortly after the order was issued, by January 5, actually, the city was taking steps to amend the ordinance.
And I'm going to stop you here because I appreciate the saga, and you know it's unfortunate that that this case keeps reappearing. But I'm struck. I guess my bottom line question is: on March 9th of this year, when this case was in front of the district court, what relief could the district court have granted with respect to your first amended complaint?
The court could have said. There was a lack of factual basis, rational basis for the First Amendment, Amendment Number One, which struck that prohibition.
The 2021 ordinance version.
Right.
Your whole complaint is about that version.
Correct.
All right.
Well, it's not a version of the ordinance. We're not trying to, Your Honor, I'm sorry, but we're not trying to strike any part of an ordinance. We're trying to strike the striking of a part of the ordinance. In other words, we want to restore the protection that protected us from that 6-foot fence in front of the Weaver house.
And what gives the court the authority to do that? How was that? How did that complaint express a claim upon which relief could be granted by the district court? Given the fact that the city can amend its ordinances,
they can grant it
at any time, and they did it. They continued.
And they did, but they are restricted. They cannot do it based on lies. They must do it based on a rational basis, a factual basis. It's not a factual basis if it's lies.
But otherwise,
deference has to be granted. I agree.
But the lies that you say permeated the ordinance revision process in 2021, the amendment process, how is that relevant to anything when that 2021 version no longer existed? So how did the lies, as you characterize them, as alleged in your complaint, which we assume to be true for purposes of this appeal.
Well, thank you.
How did those lies affect what a district court judge can do now that the 2021 ordinance no longer exists?
The lies form the basis for the action of the city in amending and striking that First Amendment, for striking that first prohibition area. That was amendment number one. The basis for that was lies. There was no factual basis.
Amendment number one is gone by the time you get to court in March of this year, correct?
It's not. We're challenging that, you see. That's what we're challenging, the striking. When it came in front of the court or the Planning Commission and the City Council again, the second time for amendment number two, they were not dealing with that prohibition in front of the front line of the residential structure.
They took that out.
They took great pains to make it clear that we're not considering that, we're not reconsidering that, that is not under consideration here. Directly asked that by a commissioner, are we even caring about front doors anymore? No, the answer was, no, you're not caring about that. That was done on amendment number one. We're done with that. Now we're talking about those other two remaining ones. And all they did at that time was rebrand them in terms of front yards. The actual effect, the actual restricted areas, were unchanged. What could the court have done faced with that? The district court could have said, okay, all you did on that Second Amendment was shuffle the deck chairs. You didn't change anything.
And when you're talking about the Second Amendment, you're talking about the 2022 amendment.
The one that was done, yes, in 2022.
Which isn't referenced in your complaint. Again, how does the court have authority to deal with the 2022 version when you make no allegations in your complaint about that version?
Well, the version that was done in the Second Amendment, the 2022, our argument is, and it had no effect on our claim, that First Amendment is invalid because it lacked factual and rational basis. No effect, because all they were doing was taking what was left of the ordinance, all the two remaining restricted areas, and they were rebranding them and reshuffling them and making it prettier or making it, they didn't change the substance, Judge. That's the thing. They didn't change the substance. Our challenge then to amendment number one remained intact. And that judge had the ability, the district court had the ability to hear that and make a decision, is that sufficient to form a rational and factual basis for a text amendment to a zoning ordinance? Our argument was no, you can't do it that way. The city was saying yes, but we never got the judge to make a decision because there was a mootness motion in the alternative summary judgment by the city after that Second Amendment, when they reshuffled and rebranded everything in terms of...
Right, and the rationale being that because the 2021 amendment no longer carries force, it's already null and void, so the relief you asked for in your complaint, that the district court declare the 2021 version null and void, had already happened.
Well, listen to that, Judge. That's so circular. Listen, if they said, well, look, you cannot ask us to revisit that First Amendment. It's already been struck, so we can't unstrike it. It's already been struck. Well, wait a minute. Judge, our whole argument is it was struck based on lies. There was no rational basis. There was no factual basis to support it. That's required. That's a very limited area of oversight, but it is an area of oversight that this courts, the district courts, have over legislative bodies such as city councils.
So let me ask it this way, because I think it helps me to be more concrete. What is the relief that you think is possible as of the date of that March 9th, whatever date we were talking about? What is the relief that you're saying is possible?
Yes, Judge. We want Amendment Number 1 nullified. What does that mean? What happens then?
Just let me. What authority is there for a district court to nullify something that has been changed?
Well, there is a statutory requirement that a public hearing be held for a zoning text amendment. We cite that in our brief. There is case law that says, and I'll have to go to it again, but it says you cannot change a zoning text, you cannot have a zoning text amendment based on, it has to be based on a rational basis. It has to be a rational basis. What's a rational basis? Oh, it's a wide window, but I think lies are obviously not going to satisfy. You cannot have lies and then call them facts. And it is admitted that there were falsehoods. The intent behind the falsehood, maybe that's open for dispute. We argue that they're lies. Knowing falsehoods to deceive, it was atrocious. It was insulting to this court. It was beyond the pale. And we think the district court has the ability now, and you have the ability to correct that, to restore that protection that we lost by the striking amendment, which was based on lies. The district court could have done it. The city argues it's impossible.
Are there examples where an appellate court has instructed some body, a legislature or a city or a zoning board, has instructed them to revert back to a previous version of something that has been changed?
I cited a case in my brief I think this Court of Appeals talks about a rational basis being necessary and otherwise then it would be null and void. Whether that, and I think it did not go to that direction in that case because of other reasons, and I don't have that.
I understand the logic of your argument and how we would be focused on rational basis. And I'm looking at it from just a slightly different lens or perspective, and that is, what authority does this court or the district court have to order a legislative body or the city or a zoning board to revert back to something that's no longer there? And so if there's an example of something, obviously that would help your argument, why I'm asking, is there an example of us or district court doing such a thing? Obviously there are examples of us striking things down, but in terms of ordering that something that is no longer there back in place?
Well, any striking, if there's an amendment striking something, then that's something that was struck is gone.
Right, but so where's the example of us reviewing a decision from a legislative body or a city council, a zoning board, to strike something? Where's that example, that case, where we review that and say that striking of something was not proper, so we're going to strike the striking?
I don't have that. I don't have that. I'm sorry to say.
And I don't mean to put you on the spot, but would be a good thing to have.
I'm right on. I don't have such a case. I do have inferences from cases and decisions of this court saying that factual basis is necessary, otherwise the act of the legislative body is null and void. I took that as marching orders. I could go ahead, and that's what we did. So we're arguing that the city has the ability to take their revised ordinance and incorporate the missing protection into it. It is not impossible. That's the standard for mootness here, and that's the issue that's really before you, is it moot? Can that struck protection be revived? And we're saying yes. That's actually fairly simple. By striking the amendment, you are left then with what was struck, and it's still an active, living thing, and it's actually the first sentence of the 2018 version of the ordinance, which can be inserted right there. It's still alive, and it would be read, and then the rest of the ordinance as changed by the City Council in 2022.
So you're suggesting that the problems with the 2021 version persist even if there is no 2021 version anymore, and that
yes.
provide a basis for your, and so you're not even saying, so you're asking the court, I think, to go beyond the relief requested in the complaint, because you're asking the court to declare the 2022 amendment null and void. And
not at all. I'm sorry, Judge, but no, we're not asking for a change in that. If the city wants to rebrand their areas of restriction, and instead of saying along the right-of-way and in the front yard is defined, and they want to say instead everything is a front yard. But you can have two front yards, because you could have both on the river and on the street. You can have this long lot that hits that. And that's the same situation under the old. The old ordinance. And so there hasn't been a change except in a rebranding or labeling to call it front yards. The city argues, for instance, that, we can't do that.
I don't want to cut you off, but I do, because we're here.
Oh, sorry.
It's been a long time, and your time is out. You do have some rebuttal time, so we will look forward to when you come back to the podium in a few minutes.
Very good. Thank you, Judge.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Paul Merwin. I'm here on behalf of the City of Anoka. I, of course, have an ordinance. I have an outline. I'm going to maybe go a little bit out of order, be a little bit disjointed just so I respond to this and cut out things that have already been addressed. And I think the key point to emphasize at this point is to think about what would happen if we did go back to the district court. You know, what would be done? And of course, I think the court properly said, what could the district court do at this point? Maybe in a self-interested way, my question a little bit is, what would I do at this point? What would I go back and argue for if we were back in district court talking about the 2021 ordinance? Would I argue at that point that this language that we deleted in 2021, let's argue about that some more? Let's talk about whether, you know, that's still in the ordinance or not, when there's been a superseding amendment and a brand new ordinance adopted, and then ask the district court to hear those arguments and spend its time ruling on an ordinance that no longer exists? And the answer, I think, is pretty clearly no. That's not a good use of my time, and it's certainly not a good use of the district court's time and resources. And that's the very definition of a case that is moot. There's nothing left for us to go back and do.
Struggling with mootness versus simply the failure of a complaint to state a claim upon which relief can be granted. Because it seems to me is that two ways of saying the same thing? Or is there a difference in your mind between those concepts?
I think it could be very similar, Your Honor. There's I can't remember the name of the case from the Minnesota Supreme Court, but we cite it, which talks about how mootness is a question of standing as related to time. And I think that's the same thing, which is, you know, what's your standing here related to time? You know, your complaint was based in 2021 at that moment in time. We're now in a different moment in time, and there's no standing anymore, because there's what you're asking for can't be done anymore. There's no relief that can be granted based on your 2021 ordinance or your 2021 complaint. I apologize. We're using the word ordinance so much.
Right. And the district court looked at this as a mootness issue. And, of course, there's a well-recognized exception to the mootness rule for issues that are capable of repetition yet evading review. Just given the history of this litigation, why wouldn't we apply that exception to the mootness doctrine?
Well, this is I mean, I believe that standard usually applies to there's going to be another, even though this plaintiff, their relief is no longer available to them because, you know, whatever circumstances led them to this have already gone by, but there's going to be future plaintiffs. That's not the case here.
Well, or situations where the, you know, the timelines are just so compressed that people aren't going to be able to get effective review. Like in this case, the criticism and the claims that the 2021 amendment process, or that the amendments were not rationally based on evidence and were the product of lies, that, you know, the court wasn't able to deal with that soon enough because the city amended the ordinance again to deal with the issue. I mean, so it is a situation that, I mean, arguably there's a repetition possibility here, isn't there?
Well, but then I think the remedy is to either bring a new complaint or amend the existing complaint, and that didn't happen in this case. We simply didn't have that put in front of us in this matter, and I think we had that opportunity. There was a discussion that, hey, the city's going to move ahead to amend and, you know, do what its legislative business, recognizing we're in court. Do we want to revisit the schedule? And the answer was no. So, you know, we went ahead with this schedule and the case we had. And that, I mean, I just want to touch a little bit on the adoption of an ordinance. I mean, this is a city acting legislatively as an aside within an aside. You know, I don't just litigate. I also advise cities about what to do. And sometimes courts tell them you did something wrong. You know, they want to interpret their ordinances a certain way and apply them a certain way. And what I always tell them is, if your ordinance isn't working right, or if a court tells you your ordinance doesn't mean the way you want it to do, don't try to twist it and make exceptions and just, you know, give out variances when it's a good project, we like this. What you do is you amend your ordinance. You have your legislative body. That's where you should be making these decisions, through the legislative process, not, you know, not when an application appears in front of you. And that's what they did. Anoka is a home rule city. They have a charter. The charter has the force of statute, tells them how to go about their business when they are doing an amendment.
So let me ask you a similar question. And I understand that there's sort of another layer, right? But the first question is, are you aware of cases where our court or a district court has reviewed the act of striking something and has said that that act must have rational basis, and it didn't, and so the act of striking is undone?
Right. No, Your Honor, I'm not saying there aren't any. I'm not aware of them. What I mean, rational basis review is highly deferential
and
review.
I'm sure you have arguments as to why these might not have been based on lies and that there is some rational basis for the changes, but sure. Without getting to that point, the layer now is, it's not simply was there an act striking some language and whether there was rational basis for that, because there has been a new statute. So I assume, right, because you're not aware of a court stepping in at that first stage, you would then also not be aware of a court stepping in, disregarding the new amendments, and then striking the amendment that struck the language and reviving that language, right?
Correct, yes. I'm not aware of that. And it would be rare because, again, rational basis review is so deferential, I think.
And then following up on Judge Bjorkman's question, do you think that analysis is more of a mootness analysis, or simply there is no claim because the statute's different?
Well, I mean, I think the original complaint is moot. Their relief cannot be granted, although I guess now we're using that same phrase again. I guess I'm not sure how to parse those distinctions. I think they get to the same point. I don't know how to parse those two. I think they're the same thing. And I think, again, referring to the way the Supreme Court defined it as a basically a question of standing over time, it's the same thing. I was just mentioning, you know, what's required to adopt a new ordinance, which is you provide notice, you do a hearing, that's statutory. The process from the city's charter says what you do is you set out, you do it via, you adopt an ordinance via an ordinance, and that ordinance has to set out the repealed section, which they did so, and we provided that, and I even quoted it in with red ink in my brief, you know, strike through this, the part. This is the 22 amendment. The language, all of it, including the language about frontline that the plaintiff or appellant would prefer have stayed in, that's here in strike through. And I think even more importantly, the new language is here in bright red text. There's no doubt what the law says, what was adopted.
The fact that your block quote included the language that was stricken by the 2021 amendments, doesn't that make it seem like the 2022 amendments by design were supposed to sort of date back to pre-2021? Otherwise, why would you have that original language included in the 2022 amendments?
I don't know what the motivation was for that. I think otherwise, other than to be clear, and they said this multiple times, that their intent was to delete all previous versions of subsection
the
E.
The challenge is now to an amendment that includes the previous amendment in it, then maybe there is something to be said here about what the district court is able to consider.
Well, there's a few responses to that. One is that a big part of what the challenge to the 2021 amendment was based on public notice. Public notice, you need 10 days notice.
I'm not getting to the merits of that
review. Yeah.
I'm just saying, can you review it? Is relief available? Is there an available remedy, whether we're calling it mootness or failure to state a claim? The fact that quoted part of your brief, to me, suggested there might be some basis for a district court to characterize what happened in 2022 as including the act of striking the language.
Well, I think no, and again, for a couple reasons. One is that it goes on to say, and here's the law we're adopting, and that language does not appear anywhere in it. There's no doubt that language is not in that law. There is no argument that the 2022 amendment process had a failure of proper notice, which was alleged in the first one. So it's simply, you know, there's a brand new ordinance. You can't simply take one line from the deleted part and shove it back in, you know, using, I guess, based on what? I mean, the district court's supposed to look at the brand new ordinance and take, cut and paste one phrase from the deleted text and, I guess, using his own sense of grammar, find some place to reinsert it into the, you know, that's not the language that was adopted by the legislature. We wouldn't do that to the state legislature, and we can't do that to a city council either, simply because it's a subordinate body. This is what the legislature adopted. This is the language they adopted. They went back and they said, you know, as part of this process, you know, when they did that the first time, one of the things that came up at the commission levels and stuff is, you know, this seems like, why are we just making this one amendment? Why don't we take a bigger look at the way our ordinance works? And they did that. They went back and they said, you're right. Let's, you know, we're using these terms that aren't defined anymore. Let's take another shot at this. Let's do it a different way, a wholly different way. I mean, it's still about fences, so it can only be so different. But let's do this a brand new way and come up with all new language, wipe everything out in the past, take out a blank sheet of paper and write down a new law. And that's what this new law in the red text is. And what appellant is asking you to do, again, is go back to a previous version, select one clause, and shove it back in to what was adopted. And there's no authority for the district court to go back and do that. I mean, we're simply, I can't even give you a standard of review for how one would do that. This is the law that was adopted. I guess if you had a problem with the way it was written and what was actually adopted, you could challenge that. But, you know, what we're being asked to do is, I guess, you know, reinsert something out of whole cloth and rewrite a law that the legislature did not intend. I guess if we want to go back and say there was something fatally wrong with what was adopted, that's the challenge. That challenge is not before this court or wasn't before the district court. So, you know, we're simply not there. It's not in front of the district court. It wasn't in front of the district court anymore. It's not in front of this court. And I think, unless there are any other questions, I've got a couple minutes left, but I think that's as good a point as I'm going to make. I'll leave it there.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'll just address a couple of things. One of the things that my opposing counsels repeatedly stated is that the city took a blank piece of paper and rewrote and made a brand new law. Hardly. They took the old law, the old ordinance, and they simply rebranded it and relabeled it. If a city is allowed to evade judicial oversight of factual and rational basis for its zoning text amendments by simply relabeling or renumbering or rebranding, but keeping the substance the same, then the oversight doesn't really exist. And maybe you don't have a role in the oversight of legislative acts, but the court precedent says you do. Says that you do have a right to take a look at the factual basis, the rational basis behind zoning text amendments. And if that's missing, then it's null and void. That action is wrong. If the action is wrong, then that First Amendment is nullified. And that means what was struck is not struck at all. The court can do that, but does not have to act as a legislative body and redraft, but can call the court or put the court's power to bear on the limited area that is not covered by deference to legislative bodies, and that is rational basis for zoning text amendments. It's required. You gotta have some rational basis. What they presented to the public, what they, the city staff, presented to the public and to the city council and to the city planning commission were lies. Blatant, egregious lies. And that should not be allowed to stand. If they can avoid even the limited opening past deference for the courts to take a look at what they do, by simply rebranding and relabeling and keeping everything the same but just calling it something else, changing the grammar, changing the tense of a verb, then the courts have no authority at all. And I don't think that's where we're at. I think the courts have that authority to take a look at, and that's what the district court could do. The city claims that it struck the entire ordinance, that is, all three of the areas. It struck it all. And we don't dispute that. They did. But they did it in two steps, not in one step. They did it in two steps. They struck it at the First Amendment, and then they took great pains to say, we're not dealing with that First Amendment, that in front of the front line of the residential structure. We don't care about front doors anymore. Don't talk to us about that. That's not a thing. We did that. That's gone. Now we're taking the rest of it and we're reworking it, and that's what they did. So if they struck the entire ordinance, they did it in two steps. We, the Jellingers, have the right and to ask the court to take a look at that first striking based on lies. That's what we want. We're not trying to obviate the work of the city council on that Second Amendment. Not at all. One of the points made by the city in its brief is that you can't introduce in front of the front line of the residential structure anymore into this ordinance because we're talking about front yards. We're talking yards here. Well, actually, the new ordinance created a whole new way of measuring a fence height. Used to be that you took the fence along the contour of the road of the land and you measured from the ground to the tip of the fence, and it was either 4 feet, 6 feet, whatever it was. No longer. In the new ordinance, you have to go to something called yard grade. Yard grade, a new concept, not defined, but you take a look at yard, you take a look at grade, those are defined, and it means that you have to go find a point in a yard distant from the rear line of the building on, or the structure on the lot. The rear of the structure of the lot. What's that? Well, it's the opposite of the front. So we're still looking at what's the front line of the residential structure. It's still there. So to say that we're
still there, then what relief would the court be offering? Other than, because if it's all still there in the 2022 version?
The same relief that the court could offer if they had not done that Second Amendment. If there were still listed one, two, three areas, and they struck the first one, and they, if the court could say that first striking is nullified, therefore it slips back in there. We've got three areas again. That's what the court can do again, because those other two haven't changed either, except by labeling and branding. The concepts are still the same. So that third one can be stuck in there too. That's the argument we make. That's the power I think the court has to enforce the small area it has, that it can avoid deference to the legislative body and say, you can't do it based on lies. You gotta have a rational basis. That's all we're asking. And that will give us our protection back against a wall blocking view and light. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thank you not just for your arguments today, but for the written submissions. We will take the matter under advisement and issue an opinion within the statutory time frame. Hope you both have a great day.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks, Paul.
And we are adjourned.